if you will, turn in your Old Testaments. Well, actually, you probably want to turn your New Testament to Hebrews 11 to start off with. We're going to be spending some time in the book of Exodus in our lesson this evening. After we finish the lesson on Romans, the 8th chapter, we are now entering into a character study of Moses in the next lesson in our series of Victory in Jesus. Again, we'll emphasize the purpose of this series of studies is to encourage the brethren as we look at passages of Scripture that give us strength, as well as deal with or look at various characters in the Old and New Testament that often went through trials and tribulations and yet were able to withstand those things, make correct choices that ensured them standing with God. Moses is a good example of this, the lawgiver. We're going to begin a discussion of him and make some applications, answer some questions in the next week or two. So, again, we'll begin in Exodus chapter 2 in just a few moments, but the introduction begins in Hebrews 11, so that's where we'll start. It's not surprising that we would begin our lesson by turning to Hebrews chapter 11. There are going to be a number of characters that we're going to look at in our study. I don't even like to use the word character, individual, individuals. When we talk about the narratives and such, if you're not careful, you use terminology that's commonly associated with novels or something like that. And this, of course, is historical in nature. But Moses, as an individual, is among many who are listed in the 11th chapter of the book of Hebrews as an individual who lived by faith. And it's not surprising because some of the major characters that are found in the Old Testament are listed in that text. And so we might make an allusion to that text on a number of occasions through our study of these various lessons. The passage that I want you to consider at this time begins in verse 24 and goes down through verse 28. Hebrews chapter 11, beginning in verse 24 through 28. There are three choices that are mentioned in this particular text that's going to make up the basic thrust of our discussion of Moses. Understand, Moses is a major historical figure in the Old Testament. As such, there is much known about his life, perhaps as much as just about any other Bible character. As a result of that, there are many things that we could talk about, but there are three things that are mentioned here in this particular text, one in verse 25, one in verse 27, one in verse 27, one in verse 28, that we're going to talk about this evening. So he says, by faith Moses, when he became of age, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God rather than to enjoy the passing pleasures of sin. So that's the first choice. He chose rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the passing pleasures of sin, esteeming the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures in Egypt, for he looked to the reward. Now, we'll note, we'll get through all of it in just a second, but we'll note in verse 26, we find the motivation for the choice. And that's a key, especially with regard to our introduction, because that's the second major point. His motivation in suffering affliction with God's people, rather than enjoying the passing pleasure of sin, is because he esteemed the reproach of Christ as greater riches than the treasures in Egypt. So he did a value, he made a value judgment. He considered the value of the reproach of Christ. And, of course, this is something that looks forward to the sacrifice of Christ and the ultimate redemption that is found through him. I think it's encompassed in his faith in God, accepting God's promises to him and the promises that would come through Abraham and through the people. So with regard to that, he chose that rather than the passing pleasures of sin, the temporal things that he would have enjoyed had he remained the prince of Egypt. So there's his motivation. I want to keep that in mind. So he esteemed the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures of Egypt, for he looked to the reward. By faith, he forsook Egypt. That's number two. Not fearing the wrath of the king, for he endured as seeing him who is invisible. And by faith, he kept the Passover and the sprinkling of blood, lest he who destroyed the firstborn should touch them. So there are three things that he did. He chose to suffer affliction with the people of God. He forsook Egypt. He kept the Passover. Now, those are not necessarily the three most important choices that Moses made in his life. I think you might could argue for that being the case. He made many other good choices in his life before the Lord. But these are the three that are mentioned, so those are the three that we're going to actually be talking about in the lesson. Now, I do want to make note of the statement again in verse 26 concerning motivation. Because what, again, he did was consider what was of greater value. The reward that he looked forward to, which was eternal, or the blessing or the privileges that he would attain if he remained in Egypt as, again, a prince of Egypt, that were temporal in nature. And as he judged that eternal reward to be a greater reward, then he made the choice to suffer on earth so that he might attain that greater reward. And I just want to note that when we talk about that, and we're looking at it from hindsight, that is, we approach this after the time in which Jesus actually suffered on the cross, that we have very much a parallel with regard to a value judgment that we make. And so when we consider what this world has to offer, and we contrast that with what God will offer us if we choose His part rather than the part of the world, then that will be a good motivation for us. And of course, as our intent in this series of lessons is to encourage, it is definitely helpful for us if we keep that proper focus and proper perspective as we, as a result of that decision, in fact, a direct result of that decision, often suffer consequences. And those consequences may be persecution or other tribulations, in addition to that which is the common lot of man, directly as a result of choosing to be Christ instead of choosing to be with the world. So, in other words, if we choose Christ rather than the world, just as Moses came into conflict with Pharaoh, that he suffered privation as a result of those decisions, we will as well from time to time. But if we contemplate the value of the choice we make to serve God, what is in the end for us, it will help us to bear up under that with equanimity and even joy. So, keeping that in mind, notice the promise of reward that is granted to us. This is something that is stated in John chapter 14 in verses 2 and 3. When Jesus said, "In my Father's house are many mansions. If it were not so, I would have told you. I go to prepare a place for you. If I go and prepare a place for you, I will come again and receive you to myself, that where I am, there you may be also." So there is that. And that, of course, is the positive. We also make note of the negative in contrast to that. So what is the end of those who, instead of choosing that eternal reward, instead choose what is temporal in nature? And I would remind you of what Jesus himself said concerning the value of the soul when he asked the rhetorical question, "What is a man profited if he gains the whole world and yet loses his own soul? Or what shall a man give in exchange for his own soul?" Now that's again our Lord seeking to encourage us to make a value judgment. You've got your soul, and you've got what the world has to offer. Understand that if you pursue what the world has to offer, it will be a forfeiture of your soul in the sense of eternity in heaven. In other words, the salvation of the soul. So what can the world offer in exchange for a safety for the soul, eternal reward for the soul? And the answer to that question, I said it rhetorical in nature, a rhetorical question is a question that in asking it, it's answered. And Jesus didn't intend for them to actually give him any answer, because the answer is there is nothing that is of equal value to the eternal soul. Nothing that you can have, anything you can possess on earth, that is more important than your soul. And so, your soul being most important, you need to live in such a way as to not forfeit it. Choose God rather than the world. So, the forfeiture of the soul is a tremendous loss. The salvation of the soul is a tremendous gain. The forfeiture of the soul is a tremendous loss. And so that brings in Matthew chapter 10 and verse 28, the second verse in our introduction, which Jesus says, do not fear those who can kill the body, but rather fear him who is able to destroy both body and soul in hell. So again, what we're going to be emphasizing here in regard to Moses is the fact that Moses chose, he made a decision when he was presented with two possibilities. The decision was based upon his self-interest about what would be best for him, what would gain him the most value in making that choice. And he chose the thing that ultimately did have the greatest value. Now, we can be altruistic, certainly, with regard to decisions we make. We certainly should be altruistic with the decisions that we make. But we also understand that as we as individuals love ourselves, that we should have a sense of self-interest with regard, especially to our spiritual standing with God. We should do nothing that would that would require us to give up our standing with God. And the fortunate thing is, while it may be, for example, that as a man, that I may come into a situation, whether it's in the protection of my family or my wife or some other circumstance, that I forfeit my life to save another. But fortunately, there is nothing that comes up in man's existence that requires him to make a decision with regard to the forfeiture of his soul for the benefit of another. In fact, God would require the opposite of that. If anything is taught with more clarity in Scripture, I don't know what it is, because Jesus has indicated that no man who loves his father or mother, son or daughter, husband or wife more than me, God said, is worthy of the kingdom. And in fact uses the term hating the father and mother, or in Luke chapter 18, leaving or forsaking father or mother, son or daughter or wife. And in so doing, receiving as a result of that, the blessings of eternity. And so whenever that kind of choice has to be made, and again, there's no real situation or circumstance where that decision would have to be made. But when that decision comes up, we are to choose the Lord. That's what is required of us. God expects that of us. And so there is no more important question, choice that can be made. Moses made that right choice. He was motivated to do so, at least in part by his self-interest, as he contemplated, okay, if I disobey God, what's going to happen to me? If I obey God, what's going to happen to me? What's best for me? And I want you to think of it that way to a certain extent. We are told to be selfless, and that's certainly valid. And yet, again, when it comes to love and adoration for God, there is absolutely nothing that God requires of us that could come between us and that love. And there is nothing that is acceptable in that regard. The best thing that you can do is to choose to serve God. Everything else will come together in the end if you choose to serve God and put Him first always in your life. Not to say that life will be easy, but it certainly, number one, will be bearable. Number two, will be worth it because of the end reward as a result of that. So, with those introductory thoughts in mind, we can get into the text in just a moment. Does anyone have anything they want to add or any questions you got from what we've talked about up to this point? Yes, Dave.
I have two comments here on 14. In verse 2, the latter part where it says that I go to prepare a place for you. Some say that's speaking of going to the cross, his crucifixion there and such. And of course then it says that there are many mansions. And I don't think it's about a gold mansion, but silver line. But.
Well, the preparation, I mean, of course, this is, I don't know if you would properly say that the phraseology is metaphorical there in the text. I just have to, I guess it would be, using the metaphor of going and preparing a mansion for the preparatory work of dying on the cross for our sins. In other words, if we're talking about how is it that the way is made available for us to have that eternal reward, it is accomplished through the redemptive work of Christ on the cross. He died and shed his blood, was resurrected from the dead. Resurrection had a part of that. But that's the whole point of the text, is that I'm going to have to leave you. What I'm going to do is going to accomplish, is going to, or what I'm going to accomplish is going to make available for you an eternal reward. And of course, it's a metaphor that is being used here with regard to many mansions in that text.
Talk about the gold mansion. You're going to have a gold mansion, silver lion.
So you don't like the phrase in the song, then, huh? Poetic license in that regard.
I don't sing it.
Yes, Jerry?
More translations than not translate mansion as room. In my father's house there are many rooms. And that is indeed, mansion has actually more than one meaning. And so,
well, in looking at it contextually, you've got a house and many mansions inside the house. That picture doesn't quite work as well as rooms in a house in that regard. My father's house. But
I lived in a mansion in Japan, but it was an apartment building. It was called a mansion.
Oh, was it? Okay.
But that, look up in the dictionary, that's the alternative meaning. It's a room in a big house.
Okay.
So
good. You know, again, it's heaven, so that's what we're looking forward to, that you're referring to in the text. All right, anybody else? Okay, then let us go into the book of Exodus. And again, we're not going to cover all of his life. In fact, we're going to basically talk about several events which culminated in the departure from Egypt. But those are the three that are mentioned in the text there in Hebrews chapter 11. So the first thing I want to do, however, is to go back to chapter 1 and verse 8. I want to remind you of the circumstances. You know, Joseph had died, and some time had passed, and the people of Israel, because they were blessed by God as they were living in Egypt. You remember that Israel's family had come to Egypt because of famine in the land of Canaan. They had come and they had sojourned in Egypt. Joseph was the second in command. Joseph died. Time passed. The people, the Israelites, became more and more numerous as God blessed them. And we're told in verse 8 of Exodus chapter 1 that a new king over Egypt arose. And he did not know Joseph. And he said to his people, "Look, the people of the children of Israel are more and mightier than we." That's how God had blessed them. They became more and mightier. So he said, "Come, let us deal shrewdly with them, lest they multiply and it happen in the event of war, that they also join our enemies and fight against us, and so go up out of the land." And so there were a number of things that Pharaoh did. So this favor that the Israelites had been experiencing and enjoying from the leadership of Egypt had come to an end. Because they were so numerous, Pharaoh was concerned about their strength, and as a result, basically they were enslaved. And there were a number of things that happened. You remember the statement that taskmasters were set over them in verse 11 to afflict them with burdens, and so they were put into the work of building supply cities. And as they continued on, they continued to multiply and grow as God continued to bless them. And so they made their burden even more onerous in mortar and brick and all manner of service. Verse 14, all their service in which they served was vigor. But what you notice in verse 15, because this has a direct impact concerning the life of Moses. The king of Egypt spoke to the Hebrew midwives, of whom the name of one was Shiphrah and the name of the other Puah. And he said to them, "When you do the duties of a midwife for Hebrew women and see them on the birth stools, if it is a son, then you shall kill him. But if it is a daughter, then she shall live." And so there was the command. And now, again, the midwives did not do as the king of Egypt had commanded them, save the male children alive. And so, again, verse 20, we're kind of going quickly down through it. God dealt well with the midwives. The people multiplied, grew very mighty. Saul, verse 22, Pharaoh commanded all his people, saying, every son who is born you shall cast into the river, and every daughter you shall save alive. So, could depend on the Hebrew midwives, because they were going to fear God. And so, the final command that it sets the setting for Moses' birth is that his own people, when you see the male children will be cast into the river of the Israelites. And so, that's where we get into chapter 2. And verses 1 through 10. So we're told that a man of the house of Levi went in and took as a wife a daughter of Levi. The woman conceived, bore a son. When she saw that he was a beautiful child, she hid him 3 months. But when she could no longer hide him, she took an ark of bulrushes for him, daubed it with asphalt and pitch, put the child in it, and laid it in the reeds by the river's bank. And his sister stood afar off to know what would be done to him. Then the daughter of Pharaoh came down to bathe at the river. Her maidens walked along the riverside. When she saw the ark among the reeds, she sent her maid to get it. When she opened it, she saw the child, and behold, the baby wept. So she had compassion on him and said, this is one of the Hebrews' children. His sister said to Pharaoh's daughter, shall I go and call a nurse for you from the Hebrew women that she may nurse the child for you? Pharaoh's daughter said to her, go. The maiden went, called the child's mother. Then Pharaoh's daughter said to her, take this child away, nurse him for me, I will give you your wages. So the woman took the child and nursed him, and the child grew. And she brought him to Pharaoh's daughter, and he became her son. So she called his name Moses, saying, because I drew him out of the water. So we all are familiar with this particular circumstance. And so I wanted to emphasize, first of all, that the reason why Moses had the opportunity to become the lawgiver and one of the greatest historical figures in the Old Testament is because of the faith of his mother. And that she hid him for 3 years so that she thwarted the efforts of Pharaoh to destroy and to kill all the male children. And in thinking about that, can you imagine? I'm not sure how many were able to get by with what Moses' mother got by with in this regard. Certainly there is that specific circumstance of Pharaoh's daughter finding him, which made it different in his case. But how many male children died in that period of time as a result of Pharaoh's orders in that regard? So it's a horrific, horrific thing. But because of her faith and the faith of his sister as well, then we find that Moses' life was spared. And this is why there was in Hebrews chapter 11 the opportunity of Moses to make the choice. And of course, we don't know exactly what went on. It is an interesting thing that you have, we were talking about 3 years. Three months. But you're talking about the nursing, talking about the child growing. How long before he was brought back? What opportunities were there for him to receive teaching and instruction so that he would know his heritage? How familiar he was with all of those things, we don't know. I'm not exactly sure. But he did know enough. For one, to become enraged when the Israelite was being beaten, so much so that he killed the aggressor in that regard, killed the Egyptian. And then certainly knew enough to know of Jehovah sufficiently when we get into the fourth chapter as the conversation went on between Moses and God at the burning bush. So that he would come back after he had spent that time in exile. So, again, first point to be made that he had that opportunity because of the faith of others. There are a number of places in the Hebrew, in the chapter of Hebrews, this is the most obvious one, but to where when you're talking about faith, the faith of an individual, there is a reference in actuality to the faith of another. And which is kind of an interesting thing. Moses' faith was made possible because of the faith of his mother. I want you to think about that. Because of the, again, applications that are possible. Whenever I have an opportunity to talk to young married couples in this regard, I will emphasize to them the importance of raising their children in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. Because if you do not, if you are not diligent in that regard, there is not only the possibility that you will lose your children to the world, but you will potentially lose succeeding generations to the world as a result of the fact that you did not do your duty. It's an amazing thing when on occasion you will see someone who is raised by parents that are not spiritually interested and spiritually mindful, who nevertheless becomes a faithful child of God. It happens. I mean, we convert people out of the world from time to time as a result of that. But the benefits of having godly parents. But then, you know, I could give you any number of examples, names. We were talking, I forget who I was talking with, I think it may have been Yvonne this morning, and the name Dieselkamp was brought up. Where is she? Going you. So who was it?
That's last night.
Is it last night?
Yeah.
Okay, so it wasn't a woman I was talking to, it was a man.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm hurrying my voice.
Oh, no, that's okay, Jim. Yeah, you're right. You're right. We were talking about it last night. It's just that Tuesday night, Wednesday morning are pretty close in the hours. But talking about the diesel camps. And I don't know if any of you know the name Diesel Camp. But they put out a bulletin. I say they, it's a family. They put out a bulletin called, I think it's Live on These Things or something similar to that. And you had Leslie Diesel Camp. I think you told me that he had a father, right? Leslie is a father. I don't know if there was a generation before him or not. But he's since passed away. But this bulletin continues on because not only does he have sons preaching the gospel, he has grandsons preaching the gospel as well. And so the Diesel Camp family in, I think it's Illinois maybe, is a pretty influential group of people.
Leslie used to preach in Chicago.
Yeah, I think it's the Illinois area is where they're all located. But this is just an example, the example that I thought of because we talked about it last night. And there are others that I could give you, not necessarily because of faithfulness, because I think there's some digression here, but J.D. Tant. And there are three generations of Tants that are gospel preachers, from J.D. to his son and then his grandsons. And so numerous individuals, and that's just with regard to preachers. So we see this time and again, where you have a family with a patriarch, and then you have, and it may be that they, you know, first generation, they were converted out of the world, but they raised their children to be godly children, and so their children were raised up, and they maybe had even more to work with regard to the privilege they had of being raised, understanding and knowing the truth, to where they raise their children to be godly children, and their generations that come as a result of this. Now, with regard to the Israelites, there were also untaught generations, because maybe there's a faith conviction in the first generation that's not found in following generations. So each generation has to have its own conviction in this regard. But the heritage that is found there as a result of you being diligent to raise your children and nurture and admonition more, what might happen? You know, one of the things that several have said to me with regard to Jeremiah's preaching is that he's really good at a young age. So he's doing a good job. He's studious. He's got some ability. And I would not want any of y'all to do this, but I have recordings of myself preaching at 23. And I don't compare to where he is at 23. There's just not any comparison at all. And I'm happy about that. You know, I'm excited about that. The ability that he has and how studious he is and his talents and such. That's a neat thing for me as a father to see. And so again, that's preaching, but the same concept is there with regard to Christians. And so Moses became, you know, when you look for example at the Mount Transfiguration, when there were three that appeared before the disciples, it was Jesus, Moses, and Elijah. So you got Moses, the lawgiver, and you got Elijah, the chief prophet, or at least representative of the prophets. So these are two great men. And if the Jews were to say, who are the greatest figures in your history as a nation? Moses and Elijah are one and two, pretty much. And the reason why Moses reached that point was because of the choices that his mother made. And so I try to emphasize that with regard to parents as you're raising your children. Not only the great responsibility you have, but also the great influence that you may wield, not only on that generation, not only on your own child, but on generations to follow, if you will be diligent to raise them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. And so I think that that says an awful lot with regard to Moses, that his mother was such a faithful individual. Okay, questions, comments before we go on to the next point? All right, second point here, Moses' life was changed. Now, when you look at what happened, there is this this decision that is made. But when you look at Hebrews chapter 11, he said he chose to suffer the affliction with the people of God rather than enjoying the passing pleasures of sin in Egypt. So when was that choice made? I think ultimately the choice to separate himself from Egypt was made when he became aware of the fact that his killing of the Egyptian was made known. That's when he said, "I'm getting out of here." And that was a decision made to spare his own life. In other words, he wanted to get out because he knew he was in danger as a result of it becoming known. Prior to that, there was a decision made on Moses' part when the beating was ongoing to stay in the hand of the Egyptian. And at least I think we can surmise it probable that it wasn't just that he was feeling indignant because one individual was beating another individual, but because an Egyptian was beating an Israelite. And he became angry as a result of it. And so he slayed the Egyptian. And so there is a decision that is made with regard to heritage and nation. Ultimately, the decision to become who Moses would become was made in the conversation that Moses had with God at the burning bush, or as God was represented in the burning bush, as found in Exodus chapter 3. So as far as how that flies into Hebrews 11, 24, 28, I think we can say that what the Hebrew writer is doing is giving a shorthand of what happened in Moses' life, which is certainly acceptable, plausible, because the individuals who were reading Hebrews chapter 11 initially when he wrote it knew everything about Moses' life. They'd be very familiar with his life because they were Jews themselves. And so they were familiar with actually what happened in Moses' life. And when we get down in the text of Exodus chapter 3, we find that the Lord appeared to him. Now he had run away. We are told that he had left and fled. And let's see here. Trying to find exactly where the text indicates it. Okay, going down, fleeing to Midian, verse 11 of chapter 2. This is where the Egyptian was killed. And we're told in verse 14 that Moses feared, said, "Surely the thing is known." When Pharaoh heard of this matter, he sought to kill Moses. So Moses fled from the face of Pharaoh and dwelt in the land of Midian. And so that's what I was looking for in the text. So this is where he is. He's in Midian. If you get down into chapter 3, we find that as he was tending the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law, so he marries Zipporah, he's in Midian, and he led the flock to the back of the desert, and he came to Horeb, the mountain of God. And so the angel of the Lord appeared to him in a flame of fire from the midst of the bush. He looked and behold, the bush was burning with fire, but the bush was not consumed. Moses said, "I will now turn aside and see this great sight, why the bush does not burn." So when the Lord saw that he turned aside to look, God called to him from the midst of the bush and said, "Moses, Moses." He said, "Here I am." He said, "Do not draw near this place. Take your sandals off your feet, for the place where you stand is holy ground. Moreover," he said, "I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob." And Moses hid his face, for he was afraid to look upon God. And the Lord said, "I have surely seen the oppression of my people who are in Egypt, have heard their cry because of their taskmasters, for I know their sorrows. So I have come down to deliver them out of the hand of the Egyptians, to bring them up from that land to a good and large land, a land flowing with milk and honey, to the place of the Canaanites, the Hittites, and the Amorites, the Perizzites, the Hivites, and the Jebusites. Now therefore, behold, the cry of the children of Israel has come to me. I have also seen the oppression with which the Egyptians oppressed them. Come now therefore, and I will send you to Pharaoh, that you may bring my people, the children of Israel, out of Egypt. So there are the instructions that are given. This was the seminal event in Moses' life that gave him the purpose and the focus that would remain with him for the entirety of his time. This is ultimately him choosing to be the leader of the people of God and suffer the reproaches that he suffered. Remember, after he led them into the wilderness wanderings, they remained there until his death. He didn't actually gain the opportunity because of his sin to enter into the land of Canaan. But he made the choice, and it was the choice made here at this particular time to follow God. Now, that's not to say that he initially made that choice. He was hesitant. He was a little bit unwilling. And it's into the fourth chapter that we read all about that. But I don't want you to skip down through the excuses he made without dealing with them. But let's get down to chapter 4 and verse 19. Chapter 4 and verse 19 of the text. So we are told that after he had, again, God had given him the answer to all the excuses, became actually angry with him because of his hesitancy. We are told that Moses went and returned to Jethro, his father-in-law, that's verse 18, and said, "Please let me go and return to my brethren who are in Egypt and see whether they're still alive." Jethro said to Moses, "Go in peace." The Lord said to Moses in Midian, "Go return to Egypt, for all the men who sought your life are dead." And Moses took his wife and his sons and set them on a donkey and returned to the land of Egypt. And Moses took the rod of God in his hand. And so this again was a momentous decision in his life to become obedient to God. Now, when we look at that, I do want to hasten to say that we can very quickly be somewhat critical of Moses because of his hesitancy. Because after all, it was God himself speaking with him. I think that we need to be careful not to judge too harshly in that regard. Number one, because of Moses' ignorance. He didn't have the same benefits that we have today with regard to a full and complete knowledge of God, His power, His glory, His ability to keep His promises, all of those kinds of things. Because of other influences, and there are any number of other examples that we could give concerning men of God who were hesitant to be obedient. And by the way, that's something that we struggle with ourselves. So it's not something that we should... just because the Lord spoke to him, that we should be overly critical. He did with Jonah as well, as an example. So Jonah went the opposite direction where he told him to go, in his example. But he did make the decision to do that. And it was a resolute decision. There are any number of applications can be made. One is that no man having put his hand to the plow and looking back is fit for the kingdom of God. Moses certainly didn't do it. He had doubts. He had questions, he had excuses, but when those things were removed and he became aware that this was God's resolute desire, that he was the one that God had chosen, then he took the rod of God. And again, it's a metaphor for us to say that, but I would encourage each of us to kind of have that same picture. When we become a child of God, when we're baptized to rise and walk into His life. You know, I want, if there's anyone who's here this evening who's not a child of God, I want you to obey the gospel tonight. I don't want you to wait. But having said that, before you become obedient to the gospel, I want you to count the cost. Make sure that that's what you want to do. I want you, when you come up out of that watery grave of baptism to walk in a newness of life, to metaphorically take hold of the rod of God and set on your way to be the person that God would have you to be. And so I like that phrase that is found there. You took the rod of God in His hand. I think that's certainly something that we should do as well, figuratively, as we began that walk. And as He did that and determined, it's been on television a number of times, but it's the story of the Bible told in various episodes. I think on the History Channel or something. And I didn't like a lot of them. For some reason, Samson was a black man instead of Semitic, and you had Lot. Anyway, you had an individual who didn't live in the time of the flood, who was living at the time of the flood. and a bunch of other weird things like that that were in there that were bad. But I did like the character of Moses when he walked into the people of Israel and he came to that place at that time, because the character, the actor, got it really good. He was resolute. All of these doubts that you see at the bush, you don't see them in front of Pharaoh. The doubts that you see at the burning bush, you don't see them as Moses leads the people of Israel out of the land of Egypt. Moses was resolute in what he did, and it was really, really a good thing to look at. And certainly applicable to us as we seek to live for him as well. Yes, Dennis.
I don't want to take too much time on this, but I think it's interesting the case that he made, I think, for Moses is making his choice. It's mentioned in Hebrews 11:24-26. A little bit earlier than what we're entertaining right now. Although I do agree with essentially what you were saying, is he submitted that commitment at the burning bush. Okay, that's obvious.
Right.
No doubt about that. But Moses' life can be divided into three sections, right? Each 40 years. 40 years in Egypt, 40 years in Midian, 40 years in wilderness wanderings. And we're told here in Hebrews 11, he became of age. That's an interesting phrase. When he became of age, he refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter. He left his Egyptian mother. He made a choice, went back to his brethren. Since he chose rather to suffer the affliction with them than to enjoy the passing pleasures of sin, the greater riches of the treasure of Egypt, those things he had as her son, not as one who has left her and gone back. Once he's gone back, then no more. Okay, right? So it's interesting. Something very important happened in Exodus 2 between verses 10 and 11.
That's the transition.
And I would love to know what it was. But there's evidence to see that he actually made his choice somewhere in there and went back to her. Now, went back to his mother and his family. She winged and gave them back to Pharaoh's daughter. So not a whole lot of teaching could be done in the matter of 3 or 4 years.
At the early age.
Whenever he was weaned. But at the burning bush, what did he say about his brother? He said, "Is not Aaron the Levite your brother?" He asked him a question. Is not Aaron your brother? Why would he ask him that if Moses didn't already know that? He already knew his family's names. He knew them all. So he had gone back to them and was living with them, and he went out to see how his brethren were doing. And when he killed the Egyptian, this was all outright murder, which was a character flaw on his part. So he still got a lot of growing to do. But it's interesting that what happened was is that the next day, when the two Hebrew men were fighting, one said, "Fight, who made you a prince and a judge over us?" He was still a prince over Egypt, and Pharaoh's daughter made him a prince. He had the authority to do. He was no longer a prince. He had already given that up. So when he left, he went at the age of 40, is when he went to Midian, right? You got that phrase in Hebrews 11, when he became of age, but here in Exodus 2 it says when he was grown, when he's a full man. So for some time now he's been living with his brethren. I think that's when he learned the truth about his heritage. He learned about God. He worshiped God. When God appeared to him in the bush, he knew who he was. When he was in Midian, he worshiped. He worshiped God, with Jethro and his children with the four,
yeah,
his sons. There's no doubt about that.
Well, you're right about that. The knowing what went between verse 10 and 11. Very interesting.
You know, we go back to that film. I love the film, The Ten Commandments. But it leaves all that out.
Oh, yeah.
It has him going from being a prince to going right back to his family. And apparently, we can piece together some facts there that you can deduce.
Good. That's a good point. Very good. Appreciate that. We will pick up with the third of 4 points in the text. We'll talk a little bit about the 10 plagues, but mainly what they led to. We're not going to go over the plagues themselves. And then we'll get into the applications after we cover those final 2 points in in the text of Exodus 2 through 13. Okay? Appreciate very much everyone's kind attention today. We'll pick up there next time. Thank you.